Future of Finance podcast, where finance finds its future.
Hello, I'm Dominic Hobson, co-founder of Future of Finance. My guest today is Gilbert Verdian, CEO of Quant, a business dedicated to making blockchains work for banks, for asset managers, for insurers, and for technology vendors by ensuring that blockchain protocols and traditional systems can interoperate successfully. Our topic today is how to accelerate our progress towards large and liquid digital asset markets. Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dominic. It's great to be here.
The fourth and final topic I'd like to discuss with you in our list of obstacles to the growth of large and liquid digital asset markets is the risks and the opportunities in disruption, a major technological disruption taking place in the financial services industry. And I find when I talk to incumbent financial institutions, they talk to me a lot about their fear of disruption. But a cynic, and as a journalist, of course, I'm a professional cynic, would argue that these intermediaries of the existing flows are actually highly adept at self-preservation. They can very easily plead they lack the budget, that there's no business case for investing in this new technology, that the return on the investment is way too far in the future. And of course, they have all these inescapable regulatory obligations and legal barriers to getting involved. They take part in various collaborative projects. They run proofs of concept of their own. They run pilot tests, sometimes with central banks and others, which enables them to kind of feign interest in making progress while actually trapping progress in a sort of endless cul-de-sac of projects which really don't lead to anything going into production at the end of the day. Now, again, are cynics like me right about this? And if I am, what can be done about this sort of institutionalized temptation on the part of incumbents? I mean, feel free to disagree with me, but
yeah,
it looks from where I am.
I think, you know, that was the case up until about 2 years ago, and maybe last year in 2023. Everyone participated in things just to understand what does that mean. But I think what has arisen out of all that experimentation is the understanding of new revenue, new forms of asset classes, and evolution of what they're doing today, but also the ability to take out friction and risk and cost into what they're doing as institutions. And that gives them opportunity. So the business cases are adding up. You know, if you do spend X million today in terms of implementing a new form of payment rail, a new form of settlement engine, a new form of tokenization, they're seeing direct bottom line growth to their target revenues because you're able to take a whole bunch of cost out and a whole bunch of friction that has been pretty impossible to disrupt for an institution just because of that cost of running the existing infrastructure. They're seeing the opportunity to differentiate with new forms of products, which gives them new forms of revenue because it's driven, you know, by investors. You know, they want new instruments, they want new asset and a new asset class to invest in. They want a new experience in terms of how they're investing, and they want access to better liquidity, and they want access to better markets, so to different types of funds, different jurisdictions. So we're seeing the light bulbs go on in most institutions where they're seeing new revenue and new opportunity which they didn't have before. So they are getting behind that now, and they are investing time and money and resources into building this today. And it's in conjunction with the change in regulation and the change in market appetite, where you're bringing things that were unregulated into a regulated space. So it gives them the incentive to take that leap and to make that step and make those investment decisions today, because it will pay off. Excuse me, it will pay off in the medium and long term. And we're already seeing that. I mean, the ETFs that were launched, I don't think there were ETFs in history that had that much volume and liquidity being put into them and in that short amount of time. So we're seeing a very market-driven approach to respond to this.
I'll come back to that, the opportunities point you made in a second. Before I do, I might just continue in my cynical vein, not least because you brought up those ETFs which have been launched, which strike me as being a typical product of the incumbent institutions, in the sense that you're doing this at one remove, you're not really going the whole hog. There is this bias towards what I call asset-backed digital assets, where the asset continues to exist in analog form, the entire paraphernalia of the supporting institutions, the custodians, the fund accountants, the transfer agents, the management companies, and this is true of both the funds and the securities industry, by the way, carry on existing. Whereas the real benefits of this lie in purely native digital assets being issued, where a lot of the intermediation disappears. It becomes, to go back to your phrase, you know, a question of programmability, of being able to automate those functions and the cost they represent, and thereby either reduce them or eliminate them altogether. Am I, you know, stuck in my cynical theme here in saying that actually I'm not surprised that incumbents are going down the asset back route because it's much less risky for them, but the benefits are much lower as a result of it? I mean, do we have to go down this path, or could we jump straight to a fully native digital asset future?
I think they're starting with something that's asset backed, you know, tokenizing existing funds that are exchanged, that are exchange listed and easily traded on a regulated stock exchange, for example. But if you look at the nature of other instruments, there's many that exist that have no asset options for, you know, futures, forward contracts, derivatives, for example. Those are still in their existing form, running on legacy systems. What's stopping institutions tokenizing those and trading those using the benefits of digital finance and programmability for settlement and coding that into the asset, but bundling and unbundling those with other assets and other instruments? So we still haven't touched upon the rest of the capital markets yet. We still haven't touched upon the rest of the money supply yet. I mean, we've only just looked at CBDCs and commercial banks have only just started looking at tokenizing bank deposits. But what about yields? What about interest-bearing accounts? What about gilts, as you said earlier, Dominic? There's many forms of instruments that are highly tradable, highly sought after, and they can be tokenized, either bundled with their the top level asset that exists, or unbundled and parceled into a different instrument itself. So we don't know. We're at the beginning of this journey, but we're keen to see where this goes, because it really is transforming the core of how we transact on all markets, being capital or non-capital.
I promise to come back to the opportunities for the incumbent service providers, because that's obviously an incentive for them to change. That's the greed as opposed to the fear factor, which might cause them to change. And we do see a lot of opportunities being put in front of them. The emphasis often is on collateral mobility as an obvious use case, and the benefits from that are potentially very substantial if you can start to mobilize collateral which is presently trapped in various traditional finance silos and use it on a global scale. We also see a lot of emphasis put on underserved asset classes like real estate and privately managed assets, and all that appears to make sense. Yet when I look at my lists of fund token and security token issues, I see that activity is actually concentrated among a relatively small group of progressive institutions. It's focused on a relatively small number of asset classes, a lot of bonds in there, corporate bonds in there, for example. And you touched on this in your last answer there. You know, we haven't yet begun to tackle the global bonds, equity and fund markets at scale. If we were to try and switch the attention of the industry towards those ginormous, you know, hundreds of trillions presently invested through those vehicles, how would we How would we go about it, and who would need to drive that? Is it the issuers or the investors?
As Larry Fink said from BlackRock, you know, tokenization is securitization on steroids, and it is quite foundational. We've seen that the market has started with something that's light touch, is easily accepted by regulators and not heavily regulated, and so corporate bonds and ESG has been a good example. So they're looking at they're looking at something, you know, from an experimentation perspective, what they can do easily today, and as they're progressing in their thinking and the maturity of regulation, they will start looking at other instruments. We are at the beginning of this journey. There's no way to know which one is next and where we're heading. But I think, you know, if we look back in 10 years time, a majority of different instruments are going to coexist in tokenized and non-tokenized form. Things will be in terms of tradable goods, that things will be bundled and unbundled as different instruments. Futures will be done tokenized and non-tokenized, forward rate agreements, contracts, derivatives, all these different types of asset classes will exist in both forms until, it's market driven, until investors decide, actually, I prefer to invest only in tokenized assets because it gives me better velocity, safer custody. It's easy for me to transact and easy for me to convert, from a liquidity or treasury management perspective. So it will be down to investor choice again. But I think issuers will provide the opportunity to tokenize different types of asset classes, different types of instruments, or offer them in their existing form, and the market will decide.
Do you think the buy side should be doing more here? What do I mean by the buy side? I think I mean end investors. They have a responsibility to earn a higher return on their capital. I think I do mean issuers. They have a countervailing responsibility to pay less for capital. But above all, I think I mean institutional asset managers. They are potentially the primary beneficiaries of a radical change of risk. Are they doing enough to drive progress towards fully tokenized digital asset markets?
I think we've been talking to a lot of asset managers. We've met the IA, the Investment Association, and their members numerous times about this. I think asset managers are quite progressive. They are looking at, they all have the same challenges. How do you reduce costs? How do you give better returns to the funds that they're managing, to their investors? And what else can you do to earn more revenue for the fund, but for investors? So I think they're very active in exploring opportunities. And it is very, again, market driven. And they are seeing the dollar signs, right? So they're seeing the opportunity to fractionalize and tokenize. And they're seeing the opportunity to purchase those for better returns and to settle those with better liquidity with tokenized money. So it is early, and we're seeing funds experimenting with tokenization. We're seeing asset managers start to look at buying tokenized parcels of assets rather than the traditional asset itself. But they can do more. I mean, they have a say. They are part of the financial system, and their investors are demanding better returns. So they do have the ability to encourage their investment banks and the commercial banks to do more, the issuers to provide alternative options for them, and to reduce costs in terms of running the fund and giving better returns back to their investors.
My last question is this: if you had a visit from the tooth fairy or whoever, and they were granted you one wish, you could persuade a leading government in the United States, United Kingdom, to do one thing to help the digital asset markets progress towards size and liquidity, what would that one thing be?
I think it comes back to the first discussion we had around having the policymakers and the lawmakers aligned by enabling the right regulation and the right legal framework to foster growth in that industry by adopting a new form of digital finance for that jurisdiction. And that will cover, it's an umbrella term, digital finance. It's covering everything from tokenized assets to tokenized money. And by having that, you can see a catalyst of that jurisdiction growing and investment pouring in, because you're seeing that implemented clearly for all the institutions to understand what rules they have to follow, you know, what opportunities arise out of those rules. And for you know, that jurisdiction like the UK, for example, to be the preferred venue for all forms of digital finance globally. So so if I were to wave that magic wand, I would make that joined up legal and regulatory change with private sector input on what they need, and making it a big milestone to enable that huge growth. And you know, we're seeing that happen in small pieces and in different parts of the system, but it needs a big bang moment, so to speak, for that to occur.
Gilbert Verdian, CEO of Quant, thank you very much for taking the time to share your knowledge and your insights with the members of Future of Finance.
Dominic, thank you. It's great to chat.